Get ready to meet Josephine, a chartered accountant who swapped the corporate world for a life at sea, becoming the heartbeat of the legendary superyacht Savannah. Over 13 years, she rose from stewardess to executive officer, leading alongside her captain to redefine crew culture, retention, and leadership at sea. You'll hear how Savannah's extraordinary owner inspired a culture driven by purpose, support, and personal growth, and how that ethos turned the vessel into not just a workplace, but a family. If you've ever wondered what it takes to craft a high-performing team, retain talent for the long haul, or foster true servant leadership on board, this episode is your compass. So tune in for a journey through mentorship, crew development, and the small but mighty decisions that shape unforgettable yachting experiences. Josephine, so lovely to have you here. I've heard so much about you through your ex-captain, Chris. And what I am most fascinated about is the whole setup on board Savannah. It sounds like there was a good crew culture, morale, productivity, engagement. So I'd love to unpack that all to really unearth what it takes to build a great team and keep a great team. Before we dive in, Joe, tell me a bit about you, your background, interesting background though, before entering the industry. So what was your background? How long were you in the industry for and what role did you play?
Okay, sure. So before joining yachting, I was a chartered accountant. I worked for KPMG here on the Gold Coast and I absolutely loved my job. I loved the corporate culture. I loved being an accountant. I loved working in a big team. And, you know, I'd finished all of my studies. I was 25 and I wanted to have a career break. So my best friend and I packed our bags. We traveled Europe and I was only meant to go for 10 weeks, but then I was in the south of France and I met a few people and they sold me the dream of yachting. And so really what started out as, you know, a career break, eventually, you know, 13 years on, brought me to, you know, now finishing my time on board yachts and on Savannah. Yeah, so I started off as a stewardess in the Caribbean, working for an incredible owner. And that is the same owner that the family that I continued to work to for my entire career. So, Wow. Yeah. So I started as a stewardess and I obviously had a really keen understanding of, you know, the accounting and finance. It was on a 50-meter boat. And I remember so clearly, like one day the boss saying to me, like, where did you come from? Because you clearly don't have a hospitality background. And, you know, I told him a bit about what I did and he said, oh, well, you know, you can only stay in the industry for, you know, 1 year and then you have to go back to your other life. You can't stay in this industry, you know, you need to go back and do your corporate dream and all of that. Mm. And then about 3 months before that, you know, year was up, he came to me and he said, you know, I'm building a new boat. And what I was thinking is that you could, you know, help the financial and budgetary and, you know, aspects. And he said, there's a job called a purser. So we want you to do that, which was fantastic. So being part of Savannah in that early phase was really exciting. And then once on board Savannah, I absolutely loved it. And it was very interesting because 3 years ago, our wonderful owner actually passed. And so the next generation of the family kind of came in and they had a really different approach and they kind of looked at everybody and what we all did. And they, from having such a, you know, he was 35. So the owner, you know, the son coming in was 35 years old. And I think not being chained by any traditional hierarchy or gender biases, he looked at it and said, well, you know, you've run the business side of the yacht for so long, you know, you should be the executive officer. You know, he thought the word purser was derogative. He really disliked it. He thought that it was meaning that it didn't really encompass the whole role. So we changed that role actually to be called financial officer. And he elevated my role to be called executive officer. And that is a role in which it was a partnership between the captain and I to run the vessel as a business and as a program. So of course, Captain Chris and, you know, the other captains were in charge of safety of life at sea. There was never, ever any gray area with that. But when it came to HR, to crew, to, you know, logistics and business, it made a lot more sense for it to be done in a partnership. So with myself and the captain, and that's how we ran it. And I think it worked really well.
Fantastic. So I just could ask you a million questions, and I know we could be here for hours, but what made Savannah and the team so unique? I know you haven't worked on other vessels, so it's all that you know, but based on what you've heard of the industry and perhaps colleagues past and present, what makes it so unique?
I think we had a really strong collective why. We wanted to be the best boat. We had a shared vision, but with that shared vision, I think crew also knew that, you know, myself and the senior leadership team, we really had each individual crew member and what was best for them at the center of how we would lead. And so whilst, you know, we wanted, you know, the program to be successful, we actually had such vested interest in really each and every one of our crew. You know, I used to always say to them, if you want to go to and join another program or you want to get a promotion somewhere else, you know, don't do it and do it behind closed doors. Come tell me about it. Let me help you. Let me help you with your CV. Let me get your reference now. Let me prepare you. You know, maybe it's better for you to do this course before you try to do that. You know, we were super lucky. I had, because in this transition time with me being the executive officer and financial officer, I had three different girls that were admin shoes that are now fully fledged pursers in their own programs doing an incredible job. You know, there was nothing better than seeing our crew members succeed and knowing that, you know, we helped them on their way. So I think, you know, our owner was incredibly charismatic. He was a visionary. He wanted all of the crew to experience everything that he did. And I think we got a real head start there. I think having somebody that the crew really looked up to, that respected the crew, I think that set the foundation for all of us to, you know, to really work harmoniously for that. You know, let's give him the greatest trip. Let's, you know, ensure that this charter season we, you know, do better than ever. Yeah, I think we were really proud of the vessel, really proud of the vessel and really proud of the culture. And so many people felt so vested in it.
You say the word culture, and I don't think a lot of crew or shoreside companies understand what culture consists of and what values consist of. So I'm curious to know, did you inherit the skills that you learned on shore and brought it back on board? Or did you spend some time in the organization of the owner? Or did you spend time with the owner specifically to understand what experience he wanted to have on board?
Yeah, I think that spending time with the owner, he was very open about what was happening within his businesses, and he was in the resource sector. And he used to say the most important thing that comes out of a mine is the miner. And so, you know, we adapted that on Savannah to be the most important thing on a yacht are the crew. Mm-hmm. And so he really set the tone. I can't emphasize that enough. And I know that's a difficult thing for many people to emulate because it did come from the owner. But having been part of that program, I do feel that each and every crew member that went through that, you know, we call it the Lundin School of Life, the Lucas Lundin School of Life. I feel that they can take that with them. You know, I did an address to the crew when the sale was announced, and you know, I said to them, be the change you want to see in the industry. You know, create that why in your new program. You know, we always had such a strong why, and we always had a culture that really was inherited from the boss and the way in which he treated his staff on every facet. So I think that, you know, I was really lucky to get to spend, you know, the best part over a decade with him, learning and seeing how, you know, someone of that caliber treated every single person that he came into contact with. So, You know, I think that then also empowers the crew to think, well, you know what, there is somebody who is incredibly successful, incredibly respected, and they still take the time to say thank you and please and to know every single crew member by name. So I think, you know, how you want to be treated is how you should treat others.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question that I haven't asked anyone before, and I don't know if you can answer this question. So don't be afraid. Let's see how we go here. If you were a broker and you had to sell the vessel to the owner, what would you say? Because there is an assumption that a lot of brokers sell the dream at the cost of the crew. So they might say something like, you can operate this vessel with 9 crew, but it actually needs 12 crew members.
That's correct. Yeah.
So what would you say to an owner who's purchasing a vessel? Because again, look at retention. The cost of crew turnover is huge. The cost of wanting a great culture is huge. Mm. So it's multifaceted, really. I'm going to hand that over to you.
So I think the biggest thing that I, you know, have learned from this experience in regards to that is what you put into the crew, you will get tenfold out. I think that, you know, we talk about Savannah, a Savannah family. We always talked about it as a Savannah family. However, when I went into a meeting with the owner, I made it very clear, as did they, understand that they are a business resource. We need to value crew just like any other business values their talent, values their business resource. You can't, like, you know, when people have the amount of, you know, resources available to them that people do that are buying these shots, what they can't fathom is that when you have a crew that has been with you for over a decade and that have known your children from the day that they were in diapers to the day they're, you know, graduating high school, the personal touches and the connection that you can create for them and the special experiences you can create for them, money can't buy this. It doesn't matter if you throw millions of dollars at it, you can't create those really special things because you don't know them. You know, connection is, you know, money is infinite in these people's world, but time is finite. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about who's creating value for your time. And, you know, what is going to give you the most value for your time? And I think that crew have such a huge part to play in that. You know, there was a story that I think about when we were taking Savannah from Panama down to Galapagos. And every afternoon when we finished work, everyone came to the crew mess and we were making paper mache, jellyfish. We were making like all the most incredible marine lives out of balloons, paper mache, crepe paper, alfoil, like all of these things, because it was one of the daughters. It was going to be her birthday when we were in the Galapagos, and we didn't have any, you know, we couldn't go out to Party City and order things. I had engineers, deckhands, the chefs after cooking, helping, you know, create these decorations. You can't, people just won't do, and this was after hours. This is after they've done their normal work dates because they had a reason to do it. They wanted to do it. They wanted to make it special for the, you know, for all the children and for the family. So I think, you know, the understanding that if you want to buy a yacht and if you want to spend the money, you know, when you think about it as a ratio of the money spent, it is such a small amount. And I think it has the biggest lever to make the greatest impact on their life.
Hmm. Well said. Well done for answering that question. So just going to some examples of shared experiences I've had with clients with, I don't know which word to use here, but let's talk about new builds and individuals, companies telling owners, look, you only really need a chief stew a month before launch or a person a month before launch because They just want their necessities when it comes to crew. So it's your engineer, chief officer, and captain is probably the passion to fulfill. What would you say to that? What are the disadvantages if you don't crew up at the right time?
Okay, so I would say, you know, we elevated our role of chief stew to be called interior manager. And this was along at the same time as elevating the purse role to be financial officer to really encompass just how important that role is. When somebody says that the interior manager, chief stew, chef isn't important to a build, I want to remind owner who makes the greatest impact to your trip. And the greatest impact to your trip, I have to say, are the service facing staff and the chef who's cooking your food. So if you don't in those initial stages engage at least on a consultancy basis somebody who has that skill set, you are doing yourself such a disservice. And I truly mean that from, you know, I think that engineers, the deck department, captains, they have their own incredible skill sets. And this is not to take away from them at all. But how often have they had to shake a cocktail behind a closed door, run out, you know, if they were trying to do something special and, you know, and serve it to them and it still be cold by the time it reaches, you know, maybe it's the swim deck, the swim platform, for example, and you've got, you know, your pantry two levels up. The engineer's never run and done that, but the interior manager has. So I think even just down to the space allocation. So, you know, it was interesting on Savannah, which is obviously the most beautiful boat in the world and everything is incredible about it. But, you know, the owner, he absolutely loved dress up parties. So when we were moving from the 50 meter to the 80 meter, we were like, but where's all the space for all of the costumes? We also had 23 crew to begin with, and we ended up with 42, including rotational staff. So you have to think about who's thinking about where that uniform's getting stored.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't, you know, I think that the disservice to owners is currently that they're not providing enough bunks in the boat. Because when you take into account, you know, all of the requirements with MLC, you really are opening yourself up to having a subpar experience because the hours, you know, you need to remind the owners that just similarly to, you know, your private jet pilots and cabin crew, yacht crew, just because they happen to live there, they also need their rest. And so I think that's a huge disadvantage, unfortunately, that, you know, they kind of skip over those details. Whereas, you know, even the chef coming in, how often during, you know, maintenance periods and 5-year refits and 10-year refits, does a galley need to all be changed because the chef's arrived a couple of weeks before and it doesn't have a hibachi, the ovens aren't big enough to bake, you know, the owner's favorite salt, you know, salt sea bass, salt baked sea bass. So I just think, for such a small incremental amount of money, why are we saving, you know, thousands when down the track we're saving hundreds of thousands and increasing the enjoyment of not just the owner, but the workability of that for the crew? Because making it easier and more practical, not easier, I should say, but when you make things more practical in those, you know, crew working spaces, it really does pay off actually for the owner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so give us some of the stats in terms of crew retention. Obviously, with a hierarchical structure and if everyone's loving their job, there's a little shift from the top for the junior crew to move up. So yeah. Perhaps from more of experience to HODs.
Yeah. So we had two different levels of retention rates. So we had in the HODs, we had 77% retention rate of 4+ years. So the program ran for 10 years. And at that point in time, we had 13 crew who'd been on board for more than 5 years. Some of them had been on board since build. And with the small, with the ranks that were not HODs, it wasn't, you know, year on year, it was the final year, it was still at 75%, and that's why we were going through a sale. So it was, you know, we'd kind of made a target to keep it at above 70%. And, you know, it's quite tough for a crew to go through a sale, especially if it's not quick. And ours was quite drawn out. And so to be able to keep that momentum, you know, up until the end, it was, you know, we felt we did the best that we possibly could given the parameters.
Yes. Do you by any chance know the average for the industry in terms of turnover? It would be a great stat to find out.
No, but I do know that I did read from one of the crew things that the current rate of people staying in jobs was 13 months. Outside of HODs, it was 13 months. I believe that was from Key Crew, so maybe I will check that for you. But report in their salary report, I think that came out.
And just quickly, last question. When it comes to bullying and harassment policies on board, obviously it sounds like you're a very professional run vessel, that you would have those in place.
Yeah.
How was it dealt with? Because I think it's all very well having policies, but it's meaningless if there's no follow through.
Agreed. A couple of things. I think in the early days, we very much relied on the management company to police. And, you know, if anybody did have complaints, we escalated it to management. We found that it wasn't necessarily the best outcome not dealing with it in-house. And we found also that a couple of things, we didn't hire people under 25. And I know that sounds controversial, but we found that people were a lot more respectful to each other, were a lot more kind to each other, and that there wasn't so much, I guess, still finding their way in the world. People usually came to us when they had their own individual purpose. So I think that, you know, we managed to avoid quite a lot of that in, you know, in the later years when we did have any situation that, you know, we thought needed intervention with management. There's only one case that I can think of, but often we would put people on performance improvement plans if we thought that was going, if they had potential to change, or they, you know, kind of didn't feel that the way they were being portrayed was accurate. So that was something that we did use, but we kind of brought that back in-house after kind of, you know, outsourcing it. We did actually bring it back in-house, and we kind of thought it's better for us to deal with it, myself and Chris, and have a greater understanding of what was actually going on board than for it to kind of be swept under the rug and just handed over to management. I do think that perhaps it was a symptom of not hiring younger crew that we managed to not have too many cases of that. I have to say we were really lucky in that regard. We also did have, you know, during the hiring process, it was quite rigorous. So if you ask any of the crew, you know, they had, yeah, at different points in times we were doing psychometric testing. You know, they were interviewed not just by the leadership, so the HOD, they were also interviewed by somebody who would be more junior to them. This was so that the person could ask, you know, maybe something like, oh, you know, what is the interior manager really like? Or what is the chief officer really like? And also so that then when that person came on board, they already had spoken to minimum 3, most of the time 4 different crew members on board. So they had a really good idea of what they were walking into, and they had 3 or 4 friends already. So, yeah, I do feel quite fortunate that we, you know, especially in the last few years, really didn't have too many cases of too much, you know, any turmoil, yeah, misconduct, yeah.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that the reason for hiring crew 25 years and above is that you're looking for that emotional maturity, emotional intelligence, and as you said, they know their place in the world. They've got a sense of idea of the direction that they are headed in. So
absolutely. I think as well that, like, we wanted people that thought of yachting as a vocation. We weren't looking for people that wanted a career break. I wouldn't have employed me if I met me 5 years on. Like, I absolutely wouldn't. I would never have ever hired me, you know, someone who's just looking for, you know, to have fun for 6 months or 12 months. You know, we wanted people that had decided that yachting was what they wanted to do, and they wanted to, you know, to excel at it, and they wanted to grow as a person and professionally.
Fantastic. So much to learn through Savannah, I think, as a whole, and those who made up the team. What stood out for me is the identification with servant leadership. So your ability to coach, guide, and support. And I don't think we do that enough as an industry, as heads of departments and captains. And this is why leadership training is so important. It all starts with self-leadership, knowing your blind spots, knowing how to leverage your strength, but more importantly, how to work with crew so that they feel more engaged, because as you said before, you're going to get way more out of them if you do.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you so much for your time. I love chatting to you. I'm sure we'll have another conversation in the future.
Thank you so much, Karen. It was wonderful. I really appreciate it.
If your brand belongs in the heart of the yachting world, this is where it happens. Yachting International Radio reaches over 1 million yachting professionals and enthusiasts every month, with 77 million impressions, 220,000 social followers, and 74,000 podcast subscribers. Our hosts are insiders, crew, captains, CEOs, trusted voices shaping the industry. This is targeted, high-impact advertising in a luxury niche. Visit yachtinginternationalradio.com/advertise. Your audience is already listening.